Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So today is definitely going to be a show full of a lot of actual positive news that we're trying to cover, and which is, in fact, some of the most important news of the day, which is a testament to what we've been trying to talk about on this channel for a very long time, which is that our efforts, your efforts, independent media efforts, to simply continue to talk about what's most important, to continue to call attention to what we see as the most important news that the mainstream media is omitting, that the politicians are obfuscating, that they are actively keeping from the discussion of the average American. Simply by being here in this chat, in this video, by me sitting here talking about this day after day, we have succeeded. And you should be patting yourself on the back to some degree for being a part of why we have actually made them shift their narrative, forced them to discuss a topic that they have been ignoring since 2015. The first article we're going to get into today is something from Caitlin Johnstone, which is similar to what I just talked about yesterday. And those of you that have been on this channel are already well aware of this topic. Those of you that have been watching this channel for a year now or more, or have been reading my article since 2015, are well aware, acutely aware of what's actually going on in Yemen. We have been stressing and screaming, why is nobody paying attention to this other than independent media like Caitlin Johnstone, like Mint Press News, like Middle East Eye, MiddleEastMonitor.com? Those people that have been aggressively talking about this and saying, why is nobody paying attention, have been doing so for a very long time. And being a part of this, we have now forced them to cover this topic. And that is how we succeed. We can see a shift happening. And that's why they're so afraid. That's why censorship is taking place. That's why they're cracking down on social media, because they see us making a difference. They need to control the narrative. As Caitlin Johnstone says, those who control the narrative control the world. And today, in the age of information, that is as true as it's ever been. So congratulations to you and to independent media for actually making a difference, controlling that narrative, stealing that narrative away from them, and forcing them to cover it. And we've talked about this, as I said, many, many times, as we can see an article here from The Last American Vagabond from 2016, talking about using U.S. arms, Saudi Arabia just bombed a busy market, killing dozens of children, from 2016. And many, many others we've talked about. Not to say, look at us, we were covering it, but the point is simply this, that there are many out there who have not been covering this. And those of you that have been watching The Last American Vagabond have been aware of this topic. And not just myself, many in the independent media. But the point is, the mainstream media has also been aware of this topic. Ask yourself why they have not been covering it. And then ask yourself, what changed? Why now are they all of a sudden covering it? And they are, which the first article we'll get into. They are indeed now actively covering this as if they've been doing so the whole time. All of a sudden, we have stars and media go, oh, what's going on here? This atrocity taking place in Yemen. We need to hold them accountable. It's wildly disingenuous, just like I said yesterday. And as I've been saying for months, for years. So ask yourself, why now? What changed? Something indeed changed. Us doing this to a large degree is what made this change. And I also have a video that I'll show at the end of this first article that highlights that this is nothing new, that the State Department themselves have been defending against this topic for a very long time. So the media is acutely aware of this and has consciously chose not to cover it until now. And that is a large part due to your efforts. And that's why what we do is so important. So let's get into the first article of the day, coming from Caitlin Johnstone. And as she always seems to be on the pulse of what's really going on, an excellent article come out today, covered by a lot of different independent media already, which I'll probably put this up on The Last American Vagabond later today, entitled, Mainstream Media Finally Concedes Defeat on Yemen, Ceases Blackout of Coverage. As you can see, and as is the main image of the video today, this CNN graphic, of course, saying, breaking news from Yemen. No, it's not breaking news, CNN. It was breaking news 3.5 years ago. We've been covering this for quite a long time. So welcome to the party, CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and all of them that are just now beginning to cover this horrific story. because of your efforts. This is an excellent article, as always, from Caitlin Johnstone. I'm going to read you a couple excerpts from her article, and then we can continue to discussing this topic in general without going on too long about how they were wrong and they've failed to do their job and we've been doing it all along. So it says, in an interesting turn of events, excerpt there. Ever since the Saudi-led assault on Yemen began in March of 2015, alternative media outlets everywhere have been repeatedly and aggressively decrying the mainstream media in the US and the UK for their spectacular failure to adequately and accurately, if at all, cover the violence and humanitarian disaster with appropriate reporting on who is responsible for it. This has all changed in the last few days. Suddenly, the atrocities being inflicted upon the people of Yemen are being pushed into the mainstream attention by the mass media outlets, which have been ignoring them for more than 3 years. The Washington Post editorial board published an op-ed entitled, End U.S. Support for This Misbegotten and Unwinnable War. CNN did some actual, real journalism for a change, with a viral exclusive documenting which American war profiteers were behind some of the more devastating Saudi bombings. Again, which we covered back on the 13th, which they're only now just beginning to cover, that was indeed a Lockheed Martin bomb sold to Saudi Arabia by the United States, which was used to kill 50 children, which is what this gets into. And yes, MSNBC finally did cover the violence in Yemen. Of course, as we pointed out, which she goes on to discuss in this article, that they covered Stormy Daniels 455 times last year, not a single coverage of Yemen, which now they're covering in spades, of course, but see, pointing out that they were choosing not to do so. And it goes on to say, of course, breaking its year-long silence to report on a U.S.-supplied bomb which killed 50 children with such urgent condemnation of those responsible, you'd never know they had been consistently ignoring such incidents, which have been going on for years. Now politicians and celebrities everywhere are shoving the horror of their government facilitating the slaughter of innocents into mainstream attention. Also, sadly showing you how much control the mainstream media still has over the dominant narrative. Not necessarily the most people watching, but still absolutely the dominant narrative of discussion, which is what I think we're actually changing here. We can see ourselves getting into their discussion points. We have succeeded here. She goes on to say, the only thing that has changed is that now it's being reported with an urgency and volume that is actually appropriate for such a horrific incident, instead of an occasional low-profile mention with little or no mention of responsibility, if anything at all. The story kept getting pushed toward the mainstream consciousness year after year by outlets like us and others that we've discussed, by continuing and repeatedly and aggressively saying, why are they not doing their jobs? Why is the mainstream media refusing to touch this story? As we actually know the answer to that question, but continuing to relentlessly, ceaselessly, tirelessly forcing this issue forward. And as she says, they made a difference. She says, for this reason, Western mainstream media have been forced to finally report on the cruelty being inflicted upon the people of Yemen by Saudi Arabia and its allies in order to avoid losing credibility. That's the important aspect there. This is how we made the difference. That there's too many people paying attention. They've made their livelihood on being the anti-Trump network in a lot of these places. So once people realize, wait a minute, the ones that are lost in the mainstream narrative that happen to get word of our coverage, they go, okay, wait a minute, why is this entity, this mainstream entity, not covering this atrocity being committed while Trump is in office? As we all know, this started well before Donald Trump, which is the point, but he is continuing it, facilitating it, so he is just as guilty for all those Trump supporters making this about some new thing to demonize Donald Trump. He is just as guilty, but it did get started well before he was in office. But the people all of a sudden going, why would they not be covering this, as we've also pointed out in the past, if it's actually that bad? And of course, they're all of a sudden now worried about their credibility, because guess what? We got through. What we did has worked. Success. She goes on to say the story got out, and the story about their lack of coverage of that story also got out. And now they're all reporting on it like they've been doing so the entire time, of course, like they've been a part of it, which, if it continues, will make it very difficult for the US, UK, Saudi war machine to retain the consent of the governed for its mass slaughter, which is what they indeed need. She finishes by saying, in my opinion, we can safely call this a win for alternative media. The voices who aren't beholden to the Empire and its geopolitical agendas refused to let this story die and eventually succeeded in overtaking the dominant narrative. Not because media-controlling oligarchs like Brian L. Roberts and Jeff Bezos gave them permission to, but because unauthorized truth was spoken and carried by many ordinary people into mainstream consciousness via Facebook shares, Twitter retweets, and just live broadcasts just like this. And speaking out loud and proud whenever possible. A people's information battle was fought and won by the people. Very, very important concept to really take in there. As always, Caitlin did an excellent job in kind of encapsulating the current moment. And this is exactly what we've been talking about. For those that say, oh, talk does nothing, enough talk, let's do something. This is what we have done. Not just us on this channel, but everyone in the independent media who has taken it upon themselves to not let this issue die. That people are being murdered in Yemen at the direct hand of the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and everyone else involved with them. The funding, the picking of targets, the munitions being sold, as we just saw, and we would not let it die, and we have gotten through. There's other good news that I'm going to discuss in this show, which is nice to see. We do have some good news to discuss today, but this one I really want it to resonate with you, that we have gotten through, and that's why this is so important, that what we are doing, that we keep this going, because we are making a difference. Now, I want to show a quick clip just to really accentuate the point that this is nothing new, that the State Department, the mainstream media, they're aware of what's been going on since 2015, since before. And someone like Matt Lee has actually been on the ball more times than not and actually asking questions from the Associated Press and forcing them to respond. And this is a great example of that. I'll show a part of this clip just to get the point across, to make you really understand that this is nothing new. And they knew about this, they were confronted with this, and all the other mainstream media sitting in this room heard these answers, knew about this issue, and ask yourselves why then they refused to cover it. And again, I bet we know the answer to that.
Okay, then this is Syria related, but it also has to do with Yemen. Over the weekend, you saw there was this airstrike on a funeral by the Saudi-led coalition. And I'm just wondering, does the administration see any difference between this kind of thing and what you accuse the Russians and the Syrians and the Iranians of doing in Syria, particularly Aleppo?
Well, yeah, I think there are.
Other than the support the Saudi coalition and don't support the Syrians and Russians? What are the other differences?
There's a couple of things, Matt. The strike over the weekend is being investigated, and the Saudis publicly said that they were going to investigate this for the potential of it being, wrongly implemented and wrongly executed. I haven't seen a single case in Syria where the regime or the Russian military, after bombing civilian targets deliberately and indiscriminately, said, "Yeah, we're going to look into that. We're not sure that that we did that right. We're going to take a look at it." Not once. But the Saudis are, and they're willing to admit that this could have been a mistake, and that they're going to investigate that, and they've done that in the past. So it is different. I think it's also important to remember that in the Saudis' case, their cities, their citizens are under very real, darn near daily threat from missiles being launched on the Yemeni side of their border, missiles that are provided by Iran to the Houthi rebels. So There is this pressing requirement for self-defense to them right across the border that certainly has driven much of their military activity in Yemen in the past. Now, I do want to say, and you saw our statement over the weekend, we take this very seriously, and we have been nothing but candid and forthright with the Saudis about our concerns over civilian casualties and collateral damage, and our concerns about lack of precision in the conduct of some of these strikes. So I don't want to wave it off and say that the United States isn't taking this very, very seriously, what happened in Yemen. And again, as you saw from the statement that the NSC issued, that that we're going to review the aid and assistance that you pointed to in your question that go to Saudi Arabia, particularly, well, we always do in every case. We constantly review that aid and assistance, but in particular light of this strike over the weekend. So, yeah, there's some key differences.
So you don't think that, despite the fact that no investigation has been completed yet, you're sure that this was not deliberate?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, you said that the Russian and Syrian attacks are deliberate.
They are.
Okay.
They are. What I'm saying is maybe
I'm wrong on this, but do you not regard the Russian call for an investigation into the attack on the aid convoy as a real thing?
Well, they can point to how real it is. I've also seen they flip-flopped, right? First they said they wanted an investigation, then they pulled it back. So it's not exactly been a clarion call for an investigation. And what we're seeing in Aleppo is nothing but a concerted effort over recent days to take that city by force, to subdue it by force. This isn't indiscriminate, haphazard, accidental bombing of infrastructure. It's very deliberate.
All right. I think this is probably my last one on this, but you pointed to the fact that the Saudis are doing this self-defense. Is that the not this one
they
specific
were,
thing?
Look, they were invited in by the Yemeni government. The
right.
Saudi-led coalition was invited in by the Yemeni government. Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, Russians were invited by Syria, by Assad to do that.
I'm
not trying to make too much of a historical analogy.
They were
invited in by the Yemeni.
And I'll definitely include that entire link in the show notes for you to check out. There's many points to take away from this. The bottom line is this is not a new topic, as they're seemingly, like these mainstream media has been taken aghast by this new story about what's going on in Yemen. They're well aware of what's been going on. And as well as the point that we have to realize all these years ago when this was discussed, what this video is from, they're talking about, well, we're going to let them do an investigation and we're going to keep track of it. And then since this point, since this video I just showed you, since then, they increased their cooperation, they increased the weapons they sold, they increased how often they're helping and how they pick the targets. So clearly they didn't do an investigation, and clearly that was all a bunch of political doublespeak. As we've seen it continue to progress, as things have gotten worse, more civilians dead, more actual civilian targets hit, with their cooperation, more political doublespeak. And as many will obviously try to continue to do, this is not... The weapons that were sold in regard to this, people are trying to make the claim, oh, well, that was before Trump's administration. But we just talked about a multi-billion dollar, $100 billion sale of weapons to Saudi Arabia from the Trump administration. So do not allow this to be a partisan debate. Trump is just as guilty, just as many bombs sold. Whether it was that specific bomb or not is irrelevant. They're continuing to sell them bombs, which they're continuing to use on Yemeni civilians. So Trump, Obama, anyone before them involved in any kind of the same actions in countries around the world are just as guilty. We need to begin to see past the two-party paradigm and realize war is the real effort. And this is nothing new. So congratulations to all of you for forcing this into the mainstream narrative. Do not give up. Continue our tireless efforts to push this information forward every single day, because we are making a difference. Let's move on to the next article coming from, coming from themiddleeasteye.com. And also, this is a good article, but it's also one that, it's not the good news. I'm getting to those last two in the good news at the end here, but this is something that ties in with the U.S. foreign policy topic we're always getting into, entitled U.S. Forces to Stay in Iraq as Long as Needed to Stabilize Former Islamic State Areas. Interesting, showing you again how this relates to the always needing an ongoing field of war somewhere to justify the increased military spending. As we see these places in Afghanistan and Iraq continue and ongoing, never ending, they need to continue to justify where they are using the bombs. U.S. forces will stay in Iraq, quote, as long as needed to help stabilize regions once controlled by the Islamic State, Of course, as we've shown numerous times, the Islamic State in general and the groups that are talking about these extremists to a large degree are funded and created by the U.S. Western nations in general. So it's kind of a double-edged sword here, realizing that they're simply trying to control the areas which they arguably helped bring down. A spokesman for the U.S.-led international coalition said this on Sunday. According to Colonel Sean Ryan in a news conference in Abu Dhabi, quote, "We'll keep troops there as long as we think they're needed." Of course, just leaving it wildly open-ended. The main reason, after ISIS is defeated militarily, is the stabilization efforts. And we still need to be there for that. So that's one of the reasons we'll maintain a presence. One of the reasons. Of course, as this is one of the longest occupations in U.S. history to date, at least openly, obviously, talking about Afghanistan as well, occupying this country and basically making it a matter of policy that we're just basically going to be there as long as we feel like it. Of course, demonstrating this ISIS presence, which obviously wasn't even the reason that America's supposedly invaded Iraq to begin with. It seems to morph and change, and it's always an ongoing reason. The Pentagon said last week that the Islamic State appears to be well-positioned to rebuild and work on enabling its physical caliphate to reemerge. So what's been happening this entire time? It's very similar to Afghanistan, and the Taliban is stronger than ever. All these years of war, and they're now stronger and well-positioned to rebuild and continue what they're doing. There's clearly a connection there with what they need to accomplish. In its latest intelligence estimates, the Pentagon put the number of Islamic State militants operating in Iraq and Syria between 28,000 and 32,000. Doesn't sound like defeated to me, as they continue to stress. The Islamic State was defeated in Iraq. We've defeated them in Syria. It doesn't really seem that way. Likely because in most cases, they're being protected. The U.S., they claim the U.S. has about 2,000 troops in Syria, assisting the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, extremists, most of them in general anyway, supposedly clear the pockets still under the control of the Islamic State along the border with Iraq. And that area they're talking about is the same one we continue to point out that has been unchanged since the beginning. Allowed to maintain, snugged right in there next to the American forces. Interesting how they continue to make the claim that they're there to keep, to move them out, and that this ongoing presence is defeated, even though they've remained the same. The sad reality here is that Iraq is just one more presence of the war they need to continue to justify all the things they're continuing to carry out. The new War Powers Act, the authorization for use of military force, completely justified by the Islamic State presence around the world, and the increase of military spending, dramatically, on and on, as we drop multiple bombs every minute in this country all around the world. Has to justify it somewhere. It's a sad reality. As we continue to see things de-escalate in other areas, they continue to escalate them other places. We have to begin to realize that. Now, as Yemen is being drawn attention to, of course, they're going to try to find other places to ramp up. That is the reality of the military-industrial complex. There is no money in peacetime. And the military-industrial complex and these munitions companies, like Lockheed Martin, like the companies we've talked about, like the companies Vanessa Beale talked about in our last interview, the British company, which has increased its spending like tenfold since the Yemen war, it's very clear that they need these war times to remain profitable. So spread that information. So let's get into some positive news, similarly on the war front, but still some good news. And I recommend caution, as always, from thinking we've simply won and that we're moving forward in a successful venture. We need to make sure we remain skeptical, even in times where we think we've succeeded. That's how they get us manipulated. And they route us into some new manipulation. These next two stories are indeed positive, but we need to remain skeptical, as always. The next article coming from antiwar.com, entitled, "As Afghan President Announces Ceasefire, Pompeo Says Time for Peace." Definitely a good thing to hear, but you can make the clear argument that this is not some U.S. saying, hey, yeah, we think peace is a good thing. This is them saying, how do we save face after losing this war for 17 years? Maybe shift over to some pretend altruistic stance and say, yeah, peace sounds good. Let's go for that, as they've continued to lose in Afghanistan, as the Taliban is stronger than ever before. But you know what? I'll take it. Peace in any regard is something we need to be positive about and say, hooray. Afghanistan may actually be coming to peace, but we'll have to wait and see how it actually turns out. So Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that the U.S. supports a new Afghan ceasefire, saying it is, quote, time for peace, and that the U.S. is ready to facilitate peace talks between the two sides. Interesting that they feel the need to even be involved in that, because clearly that's what they all want, is the U.S. to leave. That's really the only deciding factor in all of this, but still good to see it moving forward. Direct U.S. involvement may not be publicly accepted by the Taliban, of course, but again, may be tacitly allowed if they believe it will lead specifically to a U.S. withdrawal. See, you could notice there that if the U.S. were simply just to leave, that would be the deciding factor on actually finding peace in the area. But they make the claim that that's the worst thing they could do, when in reality, that's probably the solution to all of their problems. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has announced a ceasefire for the upcoming holiday of Eid al-Adha. He says the ceasefire is conditional and will last as long as the Taliban chooses to respect and abide by it. And we have to remember that this is the way these things have gone in the past, that the U.S. presence claiming to be the only thing holding things together is the real reality of what's causing the problem. That the forcefully put in place U.S.-backed government has been rejected roundly by the population in the country. And that's the real issue, despite what you hear from the propaganda from other U.S.-backed entities around the world. A similar ceasefire was declared and followed by both sides for Eid al-Fitr, if I'm saying that correctly, another holiday, though the Taliban declined to extend it after the feast was over. The Taliban issued a statement over the weekend warning that true peace was not possible so long as the U.S. occupation forces remain in Afghanistan. That said, analysts say they believe the Taliban will ultimately accept the ceasefire, even if they decline to publicly announce that they have it. So good to see some peace on maybe on the horizon. Definitely a positive step. And again, this has to really come back and resonate with us that this is because of the shifting of attention, perspective, of the narrative, that people are well aware that what's going on in Afghanistan in no way, shape, or form represents any kind of an American positive step. There's nothing there that is important for us to be wasting our money, our personnel, our possible threat on actually being present in another. It's an illegal occupation. That's what it is. As they mine resources and take the opium, that's what it's really about. And Americans are beginning to say, hey, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with national security. This has nothing to do with foreign policy. Very interesting to see. Shifting perception. We are succeeding. Final story of the day, and another positive story, and hopefully it goes the way we want it to, and this is definitely a good story, coming from the freethoughtproject.com. DEA makes shocking move, orders increase in cannabis production by 500% to fight opioid crisis. That is a fantastic headline. I really hope to see this come through, but believe me, I am highly skeptical on what they're actually trying to accomplish. And as I've said many times before, they've simply been dragging their feet aggressively in hopes that they can then control the production of cannabis, as they have with everything else. So we need to be very, very wary of what they're trying to accomplish and make sure we're seeking decriminalization over legalization and the way they can control it. But nonetheless, two very positive things here, seeing that they're simply beginning to pull back on their wildly overzealous stance on cannabis that completely goes against everything the actual American population wants, dramatically in favor of actual positive steps towards cannabis, as well as acknowledging that that actually has a way to fight the opioid crisis, which you will not hear from the vast majority of mainstream media, as well as Jeff Sessions specifically. So in an interesting turn of events, the DEA has issued a ruling which will greatly increase the amount of marijuana that can be grown legally for research purposes. In the same report, the DEA announced that they will be attempting to reduce the production of problematic opioid pharmaceuticals. The amount of marijuana that can be grown previously had been roughly 1,000 pounds, but will be increasing to 5,400 pounds in 2019. According to the filing, these numbers are quotas that, quote, reflect the total amount of controlled substances necessary to meet the country's medical, scientific, research, industrial, and export needs for the year, and for the establishment and maintenance of reserve stocks, said the DEA. Obviously, that is absurdly short to actually cover the medical, scientific, research, industrial, and export needs of cannabis, but at least it's a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, there will still be many obstacles that need to be overcome before the scientific community actually has open access to the resources. There's only one farm in all of the United States that is authorized to produce cannabis for research purposes, and there are complaints, of course, from a large number of scientists that it's often very difficult to receive samples from them. The farm is located at the University of Mississippi and has been operating since, guess what, 1968. Interesting how much has actually changed since then, with the vast majority of Americans in this faux democratic society who actually want this to change. And since 1968, they've only allowed this one location to grow it for maybe research purposes, while continually maintaining it's a Schedule I substance with absolutely no medical purposes. Nothing new to see this absurdly hypocritical and contradictory stance by the United States government, clearly because it's not about what's actually helpful for the people. It's how they can control it, how they can make money from it, how they can actually make sure that their profit structures elsewhere are not affected. very clearly. I mean, this should be basic common knowledge today, outside of those who refuse to see the reality smacking them in the face. 24 other facilities have reportedly filed proposals to become licensed manufacturers, but guess what? They've all been blocked by Jeff Sessions' Justice Department. Of course, no surprise there, as this guy is a classic reefer madness drug warrior that has no understanding or even choosing to address the actual facts being produced today. He just thinks marijuana's bad because I said so. That's the kind of person that he seems to be. Has nothing to do with what you actually want and what's good for your family, for your health, for the world, for that matter, with hemp in general. While the DEA intends to increase supply for research purposes, marijuana is still federally listed as a Schedule 1, which again means no medical purposes and a high risk of abuse, both of which are patently false. Which means there is a large amount of red tape preventing researchers from running clinical trials and conducting studies to evaluate the benefits and risks of cannabis, despite the fact that there's been tremendous amounts of studies that they just pretend don't exist. In a press release, the DEA's acting administrator, Utem Dillon, seemed to recognize that cannabis could be a possible solution for the growing opiate overdose crisis, which is something they've actively ignored, which has gotten even worse to date. Over almost upwards of almost 1,000 deaths, more than car accidents, more than many possible things, more of some of the leading causes of death in this country. Even though they've been saying, oh, we need to address this opioid crisis and do something about it, while tacitly allowing these companies to continue to do what they've always been doing, which is continue to kill people dramatically as they're trying to aggressively have cannabis remain Schedule 1 and trying to force kratom and other things that are natural and do not cause death onto that same schedule while allowing opiates to remain a Schedule 2. Think about that. Dillon is touted as saying, quote, we've lost too many lives to the opioid epidemic and families and communities suffer tragic consequences every day. This significant drop in prescriptions by doctors and DEA production quota adjustment will continue to reduce the number of drugs available for illicit diversion and abuse while ensuring the patients will continue to have access to proper medicine. Very nice thing to hear. We'll have to keep track of what happens and really hope that this is a continual change for the better. We have to have hope, always have hope, address the facts at hand, be realistic about it, but always have hope. And the overarching point of today's show, despite there are still plenty of people, plenty of aggressive war hawks in the Trump administration that are forcing down the very same Project for a New American Century type aggressions around the world and drug warrior things at home, of course, stopping us from doing what's constitutionally our right, we do see things changing. We do see them forced to address topics that we have made them cover. So take a moment and realize that what we're doing is absolutely making a difference. And it's because of your efforts. It's because of the efforts of the independent media and forcing them to address the very things that we know are the most important. Despite their ridiculous tabloid type coverage, we're making a change. We are making a difference. And that has to resonate with us. So as always, thank you for tuning in today. Make sure you check out all the independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.